You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players, uncover their stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, stick around. You're in the right place. If you're a business owner and you want to increase your cash flow, or if you're a label or artist and you want to promote new music, then listen up. For information about advertising on Everyone Loves Guitar, including information on geographically targeted ads, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. The Be Fulfilled Journal helps you be more honest with yourself and with others and be more open to handling things you've avoided dealing with for years. It's a 12-week online and journal program that helps you identify and eliminate things you do that are causing you stress and live in more gratitude and joy. It was actually developed by a long-term friend of mine who got sober in 2008, and he's put together a great deal just for my listeners. You get the 300-page hardcover journal and access to the 12-week video program online, plus free shipping, plus membership in a private Facebook support group with others going through the program, plus a 5-day mini course showing you how to let go of stuff that's draining your energy, plus a 30-day 100% money-back guarantee. To start your journey and get all the bonuses, go to befulfilledjournal.com/ELG. That's befulfilledjournal.com/ELG. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. And I got another one of my New York City homeboys on with me. We're with the one and only Andre LaSalle. Super interesting guy. Great career. And before we get started, I just want to give a shout out to our mutual friend, Michael Hill, for hooking us up.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, man. So Andre's played with a ton of different artists, from Miles Davis, Daryl Jones, John Scofield, Buddy Williams, Jerry Gemmott, which is he's a badass, man. He's a very bad man. He played for – he did all these sessions in the Motown days, didn't he?
Yep, and the main thing that he would always keep on stressing to me is playing with King Curtis and Duane Allman before Duane Allman became the Allman Brothers, because he told me that originally it was supposed to be called the Allman, like the Almond, like the Nut Brothers. And then he decided, but he was telling me the day that Duane came to him and said, I'm leaving the group. And he's like, why are you leaving the group? He goes, because I'm going to form a group with my brother.
Oh, and then
Greg.
Yeah, yeah.
So this guy played with King Curtis and Aretha Franklin.
Right.
And that's where Jerry Gemmott knows Duane.
Okay.
And also, I went to Jerry Gemmott took me to King Curtis's gravesite in New York so we can have food over there, so we can kind of sit in fellowship with King Curtis.
That's cool. He's a Bronx guy too, isn't he? Or is he Brooklyn?
I don't know if he's Brooklyn. When I knew him, he was living in Staten Island, but he's always been New York.
Yeah, yeah. I spoke with him briefly, and he said he wanted to come on the show. I would love to reach back out to him, and I'm going to do that.
Jerry Gemmott is you want to know history?
I know.
That's the cat you want to talk to.
I know. That's why I reached out to him in the first place.
That's the guy you want to talk to.
Andre's also played with Huey Lewis, Melvin Sparks, Tony Humphries. He did the Power of Love guitar mix with Delight, Michael Hampton from George Clinton's Parliament Funkadelic Band, Vernon Reed from Living Color, and he's also done work with Vernon now. He's out with Vernon doing the Band of Gypsies Revisited. He's played at the Beacon Theater in New York. What a stage, man, with Buddy Guy.
Yeah.
Hubert Sumlin, who is Howlin' Wolf's guitarist and a great solo artist in his own right. Mick Taylor from the Stones, which I'm going to ask you about, and another great player, Robert Randolph in the Family Band. Yeah. Andre has also been part of Queen Esther Marrow and the Harlem Gospel Singers Band, and he was really pleased to be working with a woman who's helped set the path for American music as we know it today, and he took that responsibility very seriously. He's got a host of styles in his arsenal, from rock, reggae, rhythm and blues, and everything else in the middle. He's toured with epic recording artists I&I, that's E-Y-E, and the letter I, and has been the opening act for Billy Bragg, Ice-T, Greg LaSalle, who's a cousin of Andre's, and who's also a talented musician from Toronto, and Ziggy Marley. Wayne County of Warner Brothers Records also features Andre on its recent recording called Fantasy World. Andre and Tony Humphries, who's a world-renowned mix DJ, has recorded in the past, and they're currently working on new projects that'll bring in experimental music. And one of those is a remix of But Beautiful featuring Billie Holiday for Sony Legacy Records. Andre plays shows regularly with Chauncey Ned, who he has a 20-year relationship with. The song Take You Away from the Wayne County CD, that's K-O-U-N-T-Y, is currently on a movie soundtrack called Push, which is airing on Showtime. Dude, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh, man, thank you for asking me, man. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. It's always good to I realize how much of my accent I've lost whenever I talk to people that live in New York. I'm like, wow, yeah, that's where everybody says New Yorkers have an accent. They like to, you know, it's funny, man.
Well, you sound relaxed, so you got a positive benefit from that.
Thank you. Yeah, I am very relaxed. But I've worked hard to be like that, man. I'm not natural.
Oh, yeah,
like
man. I believe that.
I've had to work really hard. Hey, man, tell me about the work you do with Queen Esther. Is it Marrow or Morrow?
Marrow. And the thing is, I haven't worked with her for a while, but she took me on a 3-month tour through Germany, France, Switzerland. And it was my real introduction into playing gospel music on stage, you know, in a live situation. I've grown up around gospel music, but never had the responsibility of being a guitarist in a gospel band, touring like every night. I think we had much more days on than we had off. So. But it was a great experience. It was a great experience in responsibility and learning how to play behind singers. Because when you're playing rock, you're playing whatever, you know, it's more guitar based. This was vocal based. So it gave me a great ability and discipline to know how to play with singers. So that was one of the greatest educational situations I've had.
So it helped really help your rhythm chops, I would imagine.
Oh yeah, for sure, because it was definitely based more on rhythm. It was like, how do you play behind the vocalist and egg the vocalist on rather than being, you know, like that center force. You're like a backing force, which is really good. And it's good to know how to be a support, which has helped me a lot now get a lot of other gigs and everything. Because cool. Now I understand how to be a supportive guitarist as well as if they say, we want you to take a lead or, you know, you're the main instrument or whatever. It kind of gives me a whole dichotomy of how to play with other people.
Very cool, man. I'm going to mention some of these artists that you've played with. And sure. If you could talk about how you got the gig and a cool or interesting story about working with them. Yeah. So let's start with Miles.
That was the most weirdest situation because I was a sky cap at US Air.
Holy
in LaGuardia
sucks.
Airport. And what happened was the day before, there was this song by a guy named Randy Hall, who again is another guy who I guess I would say you should reach out to because he played with Miles more than I did. And he had a song called Jamie's Girl, which I loved. I was listening to it on the radio and I just happened to turn on Soul Train. And they
Soul
were the
Train.
Band. Soul Train, yeah. And they were they were doing a live thing. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's Randy Hall. And then he introduced the band. And one of the guys in the band was a guy named Robert Irving III. So the next day I go to work, which was on a Sunday, because Soul Train used to come in on a Saturday. And lo and behold, this guy, Robert Irving, comes walking through the baggage handling.
Like the dude you had just seen on TV last night.
Just saw him the day before. Because remember, Soul Train came on like 11 o'clock in the morning. So now this was like
peace, like, love, and Soul Train.
Yeah, man. Yeah. In fact, that performance is on YouTube. Randy Hall, Jamie's Girl, Jamie's Girl. So anyway, so in comes Robert Irving. I go to him and I go, yo, man, I just saw you on Soul Train yesterday. And there's this chord in the song that I wanted to know. So I asked him the name of the chord. He looks at me and we smile at each other. And I said, is there a possibility that I could send you a demo?
And good he said, for you, sure. Man. Good for you.
Yeah. So he goes, yeah, no problem, man. So at that point, this is cassette time. There was no internet. There was nothing like that. So I was supposed to bring him the cassette to the Mayflower Hotel by the UN before he left. And I said, well, what are you doing there? You guys going to do some gigs with Randy Hall? He goes, no, I'm the musical director for Miles Davis. So I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Holy smokes.
So the day that I was supposed to go over there, Ronald Reagan was the president, and he was coming into the city, and everything was closed off.
Right.
They closed everything so that this way people, and you know, I said, look, man, I can't get over there because Ronald Reagan, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, don't worry about it, man. He goes, look, I'm coming back with Miles from Germany. Meet me at the airport. And then you give me the cassette tape. Great. So about 3 days before he comes in, I get a call from a woman called Maureen Irving. And she says, I'm Robert Irving's wife. And in my heart is in my mouth because I'm thinking that maybe.
Oh, something happened or something.
Something happened. Yeah. And she goes, no, nothing happened. In fact, Bobby wants to find out if, you know, maybe he could stay over your house in New York. And would you mind playing guitar? Because Mike Stern can't make it back. Now, this is without him hearing.
He didn't even hear you.
Dude, he didn't even hear me.
Wow.
He didn't even hear me.
Hey, if you let me stay at your place, you could play with Miles.
Dude. Yes. I was like, we're doing a soundtrack for a movie called Street Smart, and I want you to play on it. Now, this is, he never heard me. He comes over my house. He stays over for a couple of days. We go and record at A&M Studios in the city.
Holy smokes.
Next thing I know, I'm recording these like siren noises. Because I was always into Hendrix and doing the feedback. And that was it, man. And that was with Miles.
Holy.
And I was like, oh, my. And then from that point on, I was at backstage for so many Miles concerts, I lost count, bro. In fact, I have a poster here signed by Miles, which Miles never signs anything.
That's really cool.
Dude, it's some ethereal serendipity, universal. And from this point on, I'm good friends with Vince Wilburn Jr., who's Miles' nephew, has control of the whole Miles estate.
That is amazing.
With his son, Aaron. And I'm still friends with Robert Irving, and it's pretty deep.
What is, like, you know, I hear things like this, and it gives me, like, proof that there's other shit going on here. Because you couldn't, that, like, how did that happen? You know, that you the universe was very supportive of you being a guitar player, is what that tells me.
Dude, thank gosh for the universe.
Yeah.
Thank gosh for the creator, because the creator has given me more than I could even name. And I feel so honored to be the beneficiary of all this quantum energy.
Yeah, man.
That seems to be coming just because, and folks, I'll tell you what, quantum energy is real. Understand that we're all the product. We can all create, and we have to continue to believe in ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think that that's how that works.
What a very good, I think it's real if you believe it's real.
Yes.
Yeah. What a very cool story, man. That's awesome. Oh my God. Talk about being in the right place, right time. Wow.
Dude, for real.
I got
real.
Like goosebumps. That is nutty, man.
Yeah.
Talk about the Beacon Theater gig with Buddy Guy, Hubert Sumlin, Mick Taylor, and Robert Randolph.
I was doing a show in Long Island at a place called the Brokerage Pub. About 2 days before that, I was the guitar player at Sam Ash and I was demonstrating one of their wireless products from Samsung, which was brand new. This is back in the 70s.
You know what was wild? Hold on a second. When you were talking about how you connected with Robert and then his wife called you, I was thinking in my head, how did all these things go on without cell phones? Like you had to be home or you had the voice machine. You know what I mean? It's amazing to think how life revolved without the instant connection.
Before the cell phone and before the internet, there was always the universe, which is that kinetic connection between yourself and your desire.
Yeah, man. 100%, you know.
So let's talk about the first internet, which is the universe.
Yeah, man.
And then we're trying to copy that.
That's a good point. Yeah, man.
That's all we're doing. We're trying to make an imitation universe.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
At best.
Amazing how that those things work. It's just
like, So now it's like I'm playing Little Wing in the store. And again, this is one of the ways how I met Vernon, because I was like, I didn't meet Vernon playing at Sam Ash, but he found out that I played Hendrix, heard me play Little Wing, and said, dude, like, how do you play that? And we sat down and you know, I showed him the little things that I had learned, because I don't read.
Right.
So it was a matter of figuring out a logical way of understanding the way how Jimmy might have thought of how to play these things, because he wasn't a reader either. But anyway, this guy named Carl Fiadano, who I'm still friends with, who's also another great guitar player, comes up to me and says, hey, man, you play that pretty good. I said, yeah. I said, well, you know, if you'd like to, come to see a gig with me tonight, because I'm playing with Jerry Velez, who I know through another friend of mine named Chauncey Ned. I mean, the connections are ridiculous.
I know,
so anyway, he comes to me and he goes, yo, if Jerry Velez is there, I got something for you. So he came to the gig, Jerry Velez was there, and he gives me this video of Hendrix doing a news conference in Harlem. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So then I find out as years go by that Janie Hendrix got the rights to Jimmy's thing. And I mean, I didn't want to give this to Alan Douglas. So I reached out and called 411 and said, is there a number for Experience Hendrix? They said, yes. All right, blah, blah, blah. So I leave a message going, I think I have something that you want. I have a video of Jimmy doing an interview at Harlem. And next thing I get a call from John McDermott, who's the guy who's handling all of the books and everything through Experience Hendrix. And he goes, dude, are you serious? You have a video? We've been looking for this video. They call me up. I go to meet Janie Hendrix in the city at a place called the Lucky Strike restaurant in the Village at the time. Give her the video. They ended up using it for the Woodstock. If you look at the Woodstock video, there's a second video. And on there is that video that I gave them that they remastered.
That's pretty cool.
So she says, we're doing this thing at the Beacon. And I said, Janie, I want to play. So she's like, well, I don't know if I could get you on, blah, 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 blah. So I go there with my guitar, backstage at the Beacon, there for the whole thing, sound check, the whole bit. And I'm waiting there. And Hubert Sumlin comes up to me and I'm like feeling all disappointed. He's like, dude, just believe in yourself. If you just, you know, it's going to work out. It's going to work out. Next thing I know, it's like, I'm backstage and John McDermott comes up to me and I'm thinking he's going to tell me, dude, you got to leave.
Right, right.
He goes, run around to the other side. We're going to take you up on stage. And next thing I know, I'm playing through Andy Andledewitt's rig, which is exact Hendrix's stuff. I mean, it's a remake of the first 100-watt 1969 Marshall hand-wired amp.
It's crazy.
Go on stage with an old guitar, an old Strat that I have. And next thing I know, I'm on stage with Mick Taylor, Buddy Guy, Robert Randolph. And I'm like looking at the stage and I'm looking at them and I'm like, holy mother of God, you know?
What year was this?
This was the first year, I think, that the Hendrix thing had started. So this was probably about 92, something like that, if not later than that.
So Robert was just getting his steam going as well.
Yes, he was. But I mean, he was already rolling along.
Yeah.
And they had really brought him out because he was playing slide through as a Hendrix thing. You know what I mean?
Oh, so, he wasn't playing lap.
Yeah, he was playing lap steel. Okay, yeah. Well, that slide. I mean, because he plays lap, and he plays it as a steel guitar with the slide.
Yeah.
He's not playing with his thing. He's playing with his slide.
Yeah.
That's how that whole thing came about. So it was definitely another. I've been a product of serendipity.
I mean, because you were hired by Sam Ash. That's how you get to do the demo.
Yes.
How nutty is that, man?
Dude.
Holy smokes. What was. Sorry, go ahead.
The ancestors are with me. I mean, that's all I can say. I'm not going to even take credit for it. I'll just say I've been like the beneficiary of a lot of good energy.
What was Mick Taylor like? Because, you know, he's been one of my favorite players, but it seems like his stuff that outside the Stones, unfortunately, just was not as good as, you know, I thought the Stones were the best when he was with them.
Mick Taylor was a very quiet guy, but when he enjoyed my guitar playing and he let me know it, but he wasn't a dude of many words with me, but he was supportive, the same as Hubert Sumlin. I got a picture of me and Hubert and myself. And the smile and the energy that he gave me and the support that he gave me to like, dude, don't lose hope. Cause I mean, I was so sad because I had gone all the way over there and nothing happened. And Hubert was like, dude, don't give up. That's and next cool, thing I know, man. I'm being called on stage. And Hubert was like, I'm so blessed to have known him before he left.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't get to hang out with him much, but I mean, the energy that he gave me, he didn't have to. You know what I mean? He was just a beautiful guy. He was one of those guys that was like, wow, a legend, and just did not take it upon himself to use ego as part of his personality.
You happen to know a guy named Sean Chambers?
No, I don't.
Sean was Hubert's MD for 3 or 4 years before he passed. Guy. He's actually out of Florida. He's a super nice guy. He had such good, nice things to say about Hubert as well.
Yeah.
What was Buddy like, man? Which Buddy guy showed up? Because I've seen that guy 5-6 times, and it's like a different dude. It's the like, yo, motherfucker, Buddy guy, or it's, you know, the guy who's buzzed, or the guy who's just very chill. And, you know, I don't know which dude is showing up.
He was buzzed and ornery.
I've seen that Buddy guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Buzzed and ornery. The one thing that I will remember and I'll never forget was the coffee cups that were on top of his amplifier.
Really?
There was one coffee cup. Now, I was backstage with his people, and they had like about 5 of the same coffee cups. And the coffee cups were constantly being refilled with, I'm not going to say.
Whatever, yeah.
But I just couldn't believe that he could actually walk on and off stage.
Yeah.
I was blown away. I was like, yo, this dude has a resistance that is like just awesome.
Yeah.
And he's still playing today. I'm like, dude, you got some tough genes, bro.
Yeah.
And even after we finished playing, he barely said anything to me. I mean, he was like, he was just going through motions with me.
Mm.
But I got to play with him. So
that's cool, man. Good story. Thank you. Talk about your the work you did with Jerry. How did that come about?
I was living in Staten Island, and I forgot how I met Jerry. But Jerry had just come to me, and I met him through, I forgot what source, but he wasn't doing anything, man. I mean, he was trying to figure out how to get his career back on course. He was doing some gigs in the city, in the village, and one day he comes to me, and he says, dude, he goes, a guy just looked on the billboard and saw my name, walked inside, asked for me and said, Jerry Jamont, you're the Jerry Jamont? He goes, yeah. He goes, I thought you were dead. He goes, Greg Allman's been looking for you. Because Greg Allman had always heard about Jerry through Dwayne.
Yeah.
Dwayne loved Jerry. Next thing I know, Jerry says, dude, you have to drive, because Jerry was, you know, I lived right near Jerry in Staten Island. And he asked me to drive him to New Jersey Pack or whatever it was. It wasn't New Jersey Pack. It was somewhere in New Jersey. He goes, dude, I need you to drive me to New Jersey because we got to meet Greg Allman. Greg Allman wants me to play in his band. And I was right there when the gig was finalized. He already had the gig, but it was finalized right there in Greg Allman's bus. And that's when I met Warren
Haynes.
Yes. And Derek Trucks.
Holy smokes.
And all those guys. And then from that point on, anytime that Greg played and I would ask Jerry for tickets, and he was the reason why I played with Huey Lewis in the News, because he was doing something at BB King's and he asked me if I would play. And I was like, heck yeah.
Oh, Jerry asked you to play.
Yes.
Oh my God. That's so cool. So he hooked you up after you helped him out.
Jerry is just an amazingly incredible guy. He would take me to Buddhist temples and stuff like that because at that point I was really in a search for grounding. And he was helping me to find that grounding. I am not a Buddhist. I'm into the Yoruba religion, Orisha, which is a Spanish thing. I don't know if you're Spanish, but no. I mean it's very big Cuban African type of thing. But Jerry has always been loving and supportive. I mean, Jerry's like one of the most beautiful individuals I know in life.
That's cool, man.
And he took me to King Curtis's gravesite so we can eat and celebrate King Curtis's life. And I mean, it was just very intimate. Him and myself at the gravesite in Long Island where King Curtis lived, in the same graveyard, in the same place as John Coltrane.
Oh, I didn't know. That's pretty cool.
He's there too, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, dude, it was like, as I said, I can't make this stuff up. I mean.
You have to have a hell of an imagination to make that
stuff. Yeah, and I don't.
Wow, that's very cool, man. How about one last one? You have any cool Ice-T stories?
Yeah. We opened up for Ice-T with I&I.
Uh-huh.
And yo, let me tell you something. Ice-T was really part of that whole gang scene, pimp scene, the whole bit. But the one thing I loved about Ice-T, never drank and never smoked. All of his boys did. A lot of his dudes are dead right now because they were involved in the gang life.
Yeah.
And the drummer died of pancreatic cancer because he literally drank. Like, I never seen stuff like that.
Yeah.
But Ice-T, we opened up for him for the Cop Killer tour.
Oh, that's when he was like at his peak.
Right at his peak. I mean, he had just gotten moved. He had just he transcended from the rap game into the heavy metal game. And he's still in the rap game. But now I can't believe it. It was a Cop Killer tour where he was talking about killing cops.
Yeah.
And now he plays a cop on television. I mean, you again.
Can't make this up. I know.
Nah, man. I mean, like, you talk about a dude who knows how to market himself.
Yeah.
Ice-T's that dude. From pimp and player to like playing a cop.
Yeah. Right. Imagine that. Only in America.
Oh, only in America, man. I mean, it's like. The president. I mean, only in America can stuff like this happen.
Yeah, that's very true, man. Wow. So the shows were pretty wild, I'd imagine.
Oh, completely. I remember us doing a show in New Orleans at Professor Longhair's Club, the place that's called, I forgot what it's called, but that was the first time that I saw Stave diving off a balcony.
Holy crap.
And the guy got up. I mean, I don't know if he landed on somebody or what, but I remember seeing stage diving from a balcony.
Wow. So this is pretty out of control.
It was out of control. And I just remember looking at that and I was like, I don't want to get on their buses. I'm not into that whole, I mean, yo, I was, that was too extreme for me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a bit out there, man. You gotta, that's like driving around. Like, I remember when my kids were little, I used to say, man, there's nothing good is going to happen driving around after midnight. That's nothing good is going to happen from hanging out in that scene, man.
No, dude. I used to leave the concert and go straight back to the bus or go to a restaurant or something like that. And I was like, I love to see it from, I saw it from the outside. Yeah. And I just realized that anything that I need to see them from the periphery, not from the inside.
Yeah.
And I was cool with that, you know? Yeah.
Cool, man.
I'm still a pretty mellow guy. I mean, my strongest beverage right now is coffee.
That's okay, man.
And my favorite addiction is peanut butter.
Yeah, man. I love peanut butter.
Yeah, man. I'm like, I don't smoke or drink or anything. I'm like completely, you know.
Are you working on anything now that you're excited about?
Yes, I'm working on a remix for a guy called Gerald, which I'm doing with my cousin Tony Humphries right now. And I'm working with Keir Kirby from Delight. She is a good friend of mine, and just like, she's one of my supports as far as being a person that helps me get through life. And
that's cool, man.
I constantly work with her. She's not only a genius. Keir Kirby is a genius, straight up. I mean, if you listen to Groovers in the Heart.
That's a great track, man.
And she never wrote before that. I was like, Keir, believe me, I know her. And I'm still amazed and bedazzled that type of talent could just come out because you believe in yourself or it just happens. I mean, she's a badass.
Very cool, man. So where did you grow up?
Brooklyn.
Whereabouts?
Born in Kings County Hospital. Grew up in East New York. Grew up in Brookdale Hospital.
Oh, my
God. Oh, yeah, man. I'm an East New York boy.
Dude, let me tell you. My son, my younger son, he's 27. He sends me this Facebook on a message. He goes, hey, Dad, is this why you don't like us going to New York? And it was just some shit that went down in East New York.
East New York, bro.
And it was like shooting each other. And I said, no, that's East. That's the worst. That's literally the worst zip code in the city, man.
Look,
that's
let not me like tell you Manhattan. Something. There's a Netflix program now called The 7-9.
Okay.
It is about the police precinct where
the 79th precinct. Okay.
So just look at it. I have nothing else to say.
Yeah, man, I will check it out. But that's where Carmelo. Yeah. Anthony came from there, right? Or he lived there.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I used to hang out with guys in Canarsie. And there, one of my friend's fathers was the partner of Serpico.
Oh, that was in the 70s when that whole the police department.
Dude.
Bro.
Dude.
Yeah. Really crooked.
The mafia had little clubs where I grew up by South Shore High School. I mean, dude. And I was friends with them.
Yeah.
Which I tell my mom every day, I'm blessed to come out alive.
Better to be friends with them than not.
Dude, and you know what made me friends with them? That I knew how to play rock. I was walking in there playing Johnny Winter and Rick Derringer and Deep Purple and James Gang, all that stuff back then. So they were like, oh my gosh. And again, my mother's Spanish and my father's from Trinidad. So they never considered me that type of, you know, they were like, oh, you're the other, which is why.
That was the way it was, man. That was the way
Go figure.
I feel you, man.
You can come into our house for dinner, but you can't go out with our sisters. So I was like, all right, you know, just as long as I'm able to leave alive.
Right. As long as you can walk down the street and not get messed
up.
Yeah,
man. No, and I was always asking him, I was like, how come those people that used to bother the other Black kids never bothered me. They said, because we told them that if they put a hand on you, we take them out. So I was, again, right place, right time. That's all I'm going
to
say.
And people who, you know, everybody listen to this sounds like far fetched, but that's just how it was growing up in New York in the 70s.
Oh yeah.
It was very, you know, you had to just be smart about things and have a little luck on your side and not be stupid and do crazy things. What was your childhood like growing up?
My father and my mom were from different countries. So I was the first generation that was, you know, I'm the first generation born here. So my influences in culture were from the West Indian side and from the Spanish side. My father played cuatro, which is a four. It look almost looks like a ukulele, but a little bit bigger.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
So my father first used to have a guitar and he would take the fifth and the sixth string off and just play the four string because he didn't know how to play the fifth and the sixth string.
Sure.
So I grew up listening to music, grew up to him having jam sessions at the house with his friends because this is how they spent their time.
Absolutely.
Playing calypso music, drinking rum, sometimes looking at a Playboy magazine here there and asking us to leave the room, because back then that was, it wasn't abnormal for the men to have those magazines, because it wasn't hardcore stuff, you know. No, there were actually articles in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, and I grew up in a very musical, cultural type of vibe. We listened to AM radio was where I heard the Beatles, and my uncle was heavily into Motown, and I listened to a lot of Motown and James Brown, because James Brown in East New York was a very riveting and very grounding figure, because it wasn't so much, you know, this is before I was, before I'm Black and I'm Proud, but he was just one of those cats that we saw on television, like a Black dude on television. I mean, and on all the shows, like, you know, like with the Rolling Stones and stuff like that. I mean, it was just like wild, man. I mean, like, you know, why, how did he get on there?
And he was, and he was flamboyant as hell. And
he was did his, totally Negro from the South.
And he did, but he did his thing, man, which was, I
was
gotta believe that
took,
yeah, a lot of courage on his part, you know, to be honest with you.
It took a lot of courage on his part. And one thing that it was that he happened, again, a serendipity type of thing, where he fell into the right situation when they were like, wait a second. First of all, the Rolling Stones and the Beatles were the ones who like bigged him up.
Yeah.
And from that point on, he went into mainstream and he just stayed with what he did. Like, we know the reason why we know funk is because of him. Yeah.
Man, I still listen to The Funky Drummer like on a regular basis. I love that track, that whole album, you know, that it's on. It's
whole era.
There's nobody like him, man. That
Mother Popcorn to me was it.
Yeah, he was just the man when it comes to funk, man. He just did it, everything.
And he played space. He didn't play a lot of notes. Like everything was perfectly put in there. And you know something was perfectly put in there. And the dude didn't write music. He went with a feel.
Yeah.
His feel was just, you know, it's legendary.
It's a pretty good documentary on Netflix. I don't know if you saw it. I think it was on Netflix.
I sure did.
Really interesting.
In fact, it was produced by Mick Jagger.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I was really, for all the shit he went through, man, I was really, you know, his work ethic, you know, and people say he was mercurial and, but let me tell you, he had those high standards. And if you weren't going to, you know, it was his gig. You know, he was the leader, period. Yeah. So it wasn't not like, you know, we're negotiating here on how to do the part. It's like, this is, you know,
you know, something. There was another guy who I worked with that I didn't say, and his name is Don Covey. Hmm. Don Covey was the guy who wrote Chain of Fools and Seesaw for Aretha Franklin.
Oh, wow.
He also played with the Soul Clan with Solomon Burke, Wilson Pickett. He was part of that whole crew. And that was another dude who let me understand. It wasn't about all this knowledge that you had about music. It was like, did you understand the feel that you were going for and how to accomplish the feel that you're going for? It's not about the notes. It's about the feel. You can make a mistake. If the feel is right, that mistake will become part of a style.
Yeah. You know, I saw something on Facebook today, and it was a guitarist was writing it, and he was saying how he's frustrated with music today because a lot of the new music is very, I think he used the term, it's a mile wide but only an inch deep, where you have all this incredibly proficient technical prowess, but it maybe misses a lot of the feel. And I don't think that's universal, but I think there is a trend towards that, and I don't know why.
The word I have is called contrived. People think that having the technical ability gives them the ability to make music, and it doesn't.
I like to feel. I mean, that's why I think everybody listens to music. Now, maybe people have changed and they are feeling things when you hear a lot of notes. I don't know. I don't want to be moved, you know? I don't care how many notes it is.
There is a complacency right now in music. And the complacency to me comes from not having the need to learn your instrument, because right now you can go on a computer. You could literally put in the first chord. It'll tell you every chord that goes with that chord. It'll write out your bass line and all of this stuff. Nobody's thinking. And to me, two things happened, and it was a positive and a negative, and that was sampling. Now, back in the days before we sampled, we listened to his stuff and we would say, wow, like how could we rewrite that bass line to give it our own flavor? Now they just lift it.
Yeah.
And put a different melody on top of it. And people have become complacent in songwriting. Nobody's yeah. going back to understand how to play that instrument in the sense of how to create your own vibe. They're like, oh, that vibe works, so let's just copy that.
Yeah, and I don't even think it's like intentional complacency.
No, it isn't intentional.
Yeah,
no.
I think it's like, hey, man, this is look at all this cool stuff we have. You know, there's less skin. You don't need, in theory, as much skin in the game to make music. And therefore, you know, if most people have a choice where I can kill myself to do something and or I can do it easy, they're going to just do it easy without thinking about will it be different.
There's no nature. The desire to rise to that level is not there.
Yeah, unfortunately. Now, I hope it changes. I really do.
Let's just hope that, you know, as we say, situations are like the sea. It's a wave. It goes Hopefully. Out and yeah. comes in and goes out and comes back. And so we just have to, and you know something, we just have to be able to say what we could do what we can in our own self.
Yeah, that's
to
it,
do what man. We can about it and leave the situation to what it is because we have no control over certain things.
Absolutely.
So the only thing that I could see myself doing is being an example. That's it. Now, whether people will take of that example and say utilize it for their own good, or they'll just go like it's just gibberish. That's not up to me. My whole thing is for me to always make sure that I put myself out in a way that I say, all right, I did my best, and hopefully I could put something out there that'll be able to be used by younger people or older people or whoever.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't want to sound like a grouchy old man, but I think there is a bit of a complacent. It's not just in music. It's even something like reading.
It's in the
like,
arts.
Like I can hear you. You're the way you could always tell when someone's well-read. So you're obviously a well-read guy because people who are well-read speak, their vocabulary is broader and, you know, they're just a different articulation. Nobody reads. Like
no.
Like I was in the gym last week and I saw a guy with a book. I'm like, wow, man, what's that?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. He was laughing. People just don't read, man.
And you want me to tell you what's people not only don't read, but they don't listen.
Oh, yeah.
I've had so many conversations where people cut me off. And you know what I do? I just stop talking.
Yep. You just shut off the switch, man.
I'm not going to argue. I'm not going to banter to get my word heard.
Yeah.
If you don't feel that what I'm saying is worthy of your listening, well then I'm not going to waste my time saying it. I'm like,
right. And it's your business.
Talk on, brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm a great listener.
Yeah.
I'm more of an observer than I am anything else. Through observations have been the greatest source of my education. Mm. Yeah, and learning how to listen. And learning how to hear silence and the space in between the words is really what makes a sentence profound. Same thing with a guitar line or something of that sort. B.B. King made more of an impact. Albert King made more of an impact. Sunhouse made more of an impact. Charlie Patton made more of an impact because they understood how to play space rather than the notes. The notes are just a way to kind of put icing on the space, but the space is the most important part of the music for me.
Well said, man. When you started playing young and you were very active, did you know at a young age, like, this is what I want to do for a living, or what was the...
I started playing probably like around 13 years old because my father played. When I hit about 15, I remember telling a friend, I want to make sure. And I've always pictured myself with the guitar, having to take a guitar everywhere. And that's how it happened. I mean, probably from 15, I said, I want to always be seen on the street with a guitar because I want to be known as a guitarist. Because I am so honored to be able to do it because my father played guitar. My grandfather sang. I have artists in my family. And I knew that the art was, for me, my greatest part or the strongest part of my character was art. So I always wanted to be that person who had to go to work with his guitar.
You have a very good spiritual sense. That's not the right word. You have a very healthy, and it's very natural, like sort of visual ability to visualize or to very comfortably. I mean, this is what I'm getting from you anyway.
Yeah.
Place yourself into environments, like to visualize your success, sort of almost, you know?
Yes.
Where did that come from? Because that's a gift, man, to be honest with you.
I got that definitely from my mother and my grandmother more so than anything, because I've seen them come through impossible situations, creating something out of nothing. And that's something that I've more now in my life now believe that it is not only possible, but we have to always be cognizant of what we think and what we feel, because we're creating things constantly, negative and positive.
Yeah.
And I've seen my mom create, my mom made things happen that I would just sit back and go, holy cow, how? But it's a belief not only in oneself, but to be very hopeful in the sense that not only can you hope for these things, but you can make them happen.
Okay, so that you just said, and thank you for saying that, because it really helped crystallize my thought. What I was trying to say is you seem like a person who's been very trusting of the universe. That is really what I was trying to get at. Where did that sense of the universe is going to take care of me? And maybe you didn't even articulate it like that as a young man, but where did that sense come from? Was that through your mom as well?
Through my grandmother more so, because my grandmother was a very religious person in the sense that she went to church.
This your mom? Your maternal?
My maternal, yeah. My mother's mother. Mother's mother. And I, you know, believing in God, and again, I'm into Orisha. I'm not a Christian. My grandmother's a Christian. You get to understand that her faith is what made her come from a place in South America where she had nothing to a place where I'm living in a house. Like, that happened from belief.
And she communicated that.
Yes, she communicated that through example. She spoke about it in words, but it was the way she lived. I saw things happening. It was like, how does that happen? Yeah. And then what happens is I understood that faith is such a heavy part of how we make things happen in our life. And the universe works with you. I mean, that's what I found out.
Well, and you're not talking about religion particularly. You're just saying faith in optimism.
Yes.
Faith in optimism of what's to come.
That's right. And to believe that you are worthy of that.
Yeah. That's a big thing.
Because so many people stump themselves by saying, I'm not worthy. Yes, you are. And it's to have that belief that even in the weirdest ways, you can make it happen. You just got to keep on. It's like the visualization manifests itself in physical reality.
Yeah. That's very, I mean, my feeling and my read on you is that's a very inherent part of you, your character. And that's a kind of a gift, to be honest with you, man. I'm really happy for you.
Yeah. I'm blessed to be born into the family that I'm born into, and to have the examples that I've had in my life to see that this was not just a fantasy, but it really is happening.
What were, Andre, some of the low points or maybe the darker periods you've had to deal with in life, and how'd you get through them?
The darkest point for me was when I fell into a fire and I became a burn victim. So my arms and my hands are burnt, and that was when I told you that I realized that I had to play guitar because my hands were totally burned. I fell face first, but my face didn't burn. I had long hair down to my head, to my waist, and my hair didn't burn. I was playing a job in the Hamptons, and it was raining on the grass, and I slipped on the grass and fell into a fire pit.
Holy smokes.
So that was one of the low points. After that, I had an issue with alcohol, which I realized was almost like a PTSD.
Because of through the incident with the fire.
Yeah. And what happened was when I fell into the fire, I passed out, but my eyes were wide open. They thought I was having a stroke because for some reason I went into this hypnotic state and I didn't feel any pain. I wasn't translating or emoting any pain. I wasn't communicating any pain to them. Meanwhile, I was on fire and they just could not understand that. And I can't understand it either. But it came to a point where I would constantly have these weird dreams of falling in a vertigo, you know, a vortex type of thing. And then there was a point when I was doing a lot of drinking that I realized that I was just pushing myself further into a bad place rather than getting relief. And then a spiritual thing kicked in and the urge went away to drink. The urge went away to smoke. So that's the reason why now I don't smoke or I don't drink. And I don't have any problem with anybody doing it.
Yeah.
It's just not right for me. That's all.
Wow. First of all, thank you for sharing those things.
And going through divorces and do it too, bro.
Oh, bro.
I had no kids. So, you know, I was able to walk away from it. But dude, yo.
Yeah.
I'm surrounded by people who have made that mistake, and I've seen, thank goodness, again, being an observer has paid off for me. Yeah. I don't have to jump into it, you know?
Yeah. It's good that you were able to, to get out of drinking, man. That's a tough box for a lot of people.
Man. It was tough for me too. But the thing is that one day I just kept on asking the universe, turn off the switch. And one day the switch turned off and I was like, holy cow. And then I was afraid I couldn't go to sleep. And the first day I stopped drinking, I slept like a baby. And I was like, holy cow.
Whoa.
I went to sleep. Like, dude, I mean, my life is full of blessings.
Well, good for you, man. I'm happy. You deserve it.
Thank you.
Let's talk about gear for a few minutes and music.
Yes.
What's your go-to guitar right now? And what other two guitars would round out your top three?
Can you see? All right.
I see. Yes. The red Strat. It looks like a red Strat. It's not a Fender though, is it? No, what is that? Oh man, that's a cockpit of buttons there, man.
This is when the original guitar synthesizer came out from Roland called the GR700. This was an alternative guitar to buy instead of that thing that looked like a rifle. This is made by Padula, who only makes basses. And these pickups are Bartolini pickups, and they don't even make the guitar pickups anymore. So, I mean, I have this. I love Strats. I have let me pull this guitar out. This one's a real special one for me also.
Oh, it's called a beautiful
S. 335, not an ES. So this is a solid body 335.
So let me describe it. It's what is that called? What it's black. It's black and white. What is that pattern called?
This is Sunburst. But this one is called a Silverburst.
Silverburst, right? I couldn't think.
Yeah, it's fatigue green. I don't even understand how they got silver, but
it's a nice
somebody in Gibson
guitar,
was
man.
Colorblind.
It's an S3. So what does that sound like?
Oh man, it's a beautiful sound, man. It's like, to me, it's really hearty because it's original PAF pickups.
Oh, okay. So it's like the 57s? Is that the classic?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have those. I love those pickups, man. They're great.
And these guitars were a little bit hyped up because the pickups were a little bit hyped up because they had just put out this S335, and the big person I think who was using this at one point was Larry Carlton.
Okay.
I think. Because he was using the semi-hollow body, and this was like a solid body version. So the sound to me is is beautiful.
That's really cool, man. I love that guitar.
And I have a bunch of Strats. I've got, if I don't know if you could see that.
Yeah, man.
That's a Hartfield. Like, that's a prototype. I have Hamers. I have a lot of guitars, and I feel that it's more than having a favorite guitar. It's what guitar is right for the situation that I'm playing in, because all the guitars carry different sounds.
Sure.
And to me, have different spirits. So I almost asked the guitar.
Yeah.
To clap hands with me.
Yeah.
And let me know which one of you feel that you're right, or I ask the universe, tell me which one is the right one. So for me, I had probably have like a choice of about 25.
That's awesome, man.
And I just started working with, Ovation Guitar. So I'm actually endorsing them.
On acoustic. Very cool.
On acoustic. Yeah. 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 Shout out to my boy, Hunter Carlson, who believes in me, and I love that dude.
Very cool, man. He's at Ovation?
Yep, he's at Ovation. Southern boy. He's my dude. He's my brother. I don't even call him my friend. I love him. Very cool, man.
Any interesting stories how you got any of those guitars?
I have a 1978 Telecaster that I use. Telecaster cool. Custom. That's the best story I have. And what happened is I have my best friend, Roland, who's part of the Nailord thing.
Yeah.
Roland, all right. Okay. He was working as a doorman. I think he's still in Manhattan, at a doorman in a place at 68th and 2nd. And he used to hang out with Sammy Kahn,
okay.
Steve Kahn's father.
Yeah.
Sammy Kahn is the guy who wrote High Hopes for Frank Sinatra. And David Dinkins lives there too.
That's so funny. David Dinkins. Yeah, I haven't heard that
David
name
Dinkins.
In a while.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm telling you, man. I'll bring back some. Bring back
this some is like memories. A walk down memory, New York Yo, nostalgia.
So Roland calls me up one day and he goes, dude, I got a present for you. I said, what is that? He goes, I have this. It says Telecaster on it. He says, somebody left it on the elevator. I was like, no way. I said, how many knobs does it have on it? He said, 4. I said, that's not a Telecaster. Because you know what Telecaster and I do is the two knobs with the
switch. Yeah.
He goes, no, dude. I said, read me exactly what it says on the headstock. He says, Fender Telecaster Custom. I said, I'll be right there. Humbucker on top, single coil on the bottom, 4 knobs, thin neck.
Wow.
Somebody left it on the elevator, and I still have it today.
Nice, man. 78 Tele Custom. That's a great find. Wow. Good
yep.
for you, man. You remember the first CD, wouldn't be a CD, but a record that you purchased?
I just want to testify by the Parliaments. My father got it for me when I was 7. After that, one of the first records I bought was Pop, the record with the Temptations, Papa was Rolling Stone. Oh. I have Mi Corazon from Carole King. Corazon, Mi Corazon. So I have that from her. My first record that I studied note for note was a song called Brother Louie by Stories.
That was one of the first
records I learned how to play note for note. Trapeze, We Are the Music, You Are the Music, We're Just the Band with Mel Galley, who ended up being in, yeah. I mean, dude, I mean, yeah.
All right, so tell me Desert Island Discs, top 3. Just right now, knee-jerk reaction, just for today. For
this Brandenburg Concerto by Bach. Rainbow Bridge by Hendrix. And what would the third one be? It would probably be, I'd have to think about that third one. Actually, nah, because that's even though I was going to say that I like the record, but it isn't my favorite because we're talking about an all-around album. So far, that's the only thing I could think of. Brandenburg Concerto and Rainbow Bridge by Hendrix.
Fair enough, man. What would you say?
And Tutu. I love Tutu by Miles Davis. Yo, I love that album. Wicked.
Most important thing you've learned about yourself through your life experience and your career and just everything.
take time and listen. Listening is more important than talking. When playing guitar, be true to myself, to what I'm hearing, not to what I think other people want to hear.
Good for you.
And be as considerate to myself and other people as humanly possible.
That's very important that you put yourself in there, because I don't think people, you can't do better for anybody else than you can do for yourself. Now, you may have short term, like you could be, but really long term, man, if you're not taking care of you, which doesn't mean taking care of you at someone's expense. It means just taking, being like, I always tell people, like in business, I say, hey, I want this or that. I say, hey, listen, I'm a fair person. And that means being fair to you and being fair to me. So let me think about that and let's see what we could do to be fair to everybody. You know,
I was speaking to somebody and they wanted to be able to give things to other people. And I said, that's wonderful. In fact, you're right. You should. But there's an old thing in the Bible. It says, my cup, you know, my cup runneth over. Your cup has to run over before you can give to anybody, because if you do not have enough in your cup to run over, you're running at a deficit. And yeah. If you're running at a deficit, you're not the best that you can be, so you can't be supportive to anybody else.
Yeah.
You have to make sure you're on full to be able to be supportive. And you have to understand how to be selfish to be selfless.
Yeah, but selfish not at someone else's expense.
And again,
yeah.
Selfish to be selfless. And in other words, right. Why do you have to be selfish? So that this way your cup could be full.
Full, yeah,
and from that point on, then you could be selfless to others and really help others.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's really important. Plus, if you're not treating yourself good, nothing else is – I mean, nothing's working. Nothing's going to work, man.
Your foundation has to be as on point as possible so that you could help other people find theirs. If that's what your choice is to do in life.
Yeah. Well, I totally agree with you. What's your best childhood memory, Andre?
Eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with my dad, drinking Ovaltine at night. My mom used to work the midnight shift, and my father used to give us peanut butter and jelly sandwiches on Tasty Bread. Remember Tasty Bread?
I do.
Remember Silver Cup, the round ones?
I do.
Yeah, dude, that and Ovaltine was my life, bro. That for me.
Can I tell you something? This is God's honest truth. Literally.
Tell me, please.
Just as I was, before I was talking to you, I was on Amazon buying some Ovaltine.
There you go.
I swear to God.
Yeah, my favorite was the orange label, not the yellow label. Yeah, although I eventually liked the yellow label too, the malt.
Yeah, that's so funny, man.
Yeah, man.
Ovaltine,
no,
that's good stuff.
I'm there. I'm with you.
Something about yourself people might be surprised to hear or find a little odd.
Wow. Did I like to cook?
Oh, that's cool. What do you cook, man?
Oh, I love to cook my lasagna in vegetarian forms or in ground turkey forms. I love to cook. I want to learn how to make bread.
Very cool. Number one hobby for musicians, cooking.
Yes.
Number one hobby.
I'm a computer network nut. I love computers. Awesome. And I think that's pretty normal for musicians too.
Nowadays,
I mean, dude, my first writing was on the TX 3440, and then as soon as the Commodore 64 came out, Commodore I immediately 64. Got the. Yeah, bro, I've been writing. Yeah,
that's a long time ago, man.
Yes, Commodore 64. Yes.
Most important thing your dad taught you.
To be true to myself.
And how about your mom? Most important thing she taught you?
How to be strong and loving. My father taught me loving, but my mom died for me. I mean, you know, I mean, I told her, I said, if I was her son, if I was my own son, I'd have killed me a long time ago. So you talk about unconditional love. She's like the template of that for me.
Yeah, that's when you have kids, you learn that. You have to, you, that's, if you yeah. didn't know it before, I learned it very much. It's unconditional, and yeah, you have to.
Unconditional.
And you have to throw all expectations out the window because everybody's their selves, and whatever thing you think is going to happen is really, yes. You learn that you have really no right to even think about what's going to happen. It's just let them unfold like a flower, not to sound corny, but let them develop or unfold the way they're going to. And that's what you got. That's what you get to deal with, not what you thought in your head. That's what I've learned anyway.
They start as kids who need to be led to become adults who lead.
Yeah. Or hopefully
lead their own life, at least in their own life.
Yeah.
They are the ones who will charter out that path.
Yeah. Hopefully. It's like, funny enough, you should say that. I got my younger one calling me now. I'll talk to him afterwards.
God bless.
No, my middle one. Sorry, my younger son.
Bless him.
You have any non-musical superpowers? I know you do.
Spiritualism and visualization and manifestation.
You know what, man? So do you groove with Michael on that? Because we had a pretty deep conversation. Michael Hill, about a lot of that stuff too.
I have never talked with Michael about it, but Michael and myself have that energy together that even though we've never talked about it, we know, I know. And it's funny because I never, ever spoke to Michael
about that. A spiritual thing. That's interesting, yeah, because he puts a lot of his time into that.
When Michael and myself hug, there's definitely more than a physical thing. Yeah. So yes, I'm not surprised to hear this. In fact, now I got to go back to Michael and talk to him.
No, you got
to
talk to him about it.
Word,
you guys are on the same trip, you know, in a very good way. Yeah. Maybe not the same direction, but you got this, your intentions are very similar, you know.
Look at how many paths lead to the same destination.
Yeah. Yeah, totally, man. Yeah. He was a real, this is like we had a similar conversation. It was very interesting.
Wild.
You have any hobbies or interests outside of music? Andre, besides cooking?
I'm really, and I do. I'm just trying to think, like, what do I like to do? Not too much. I mean, I wouldn't say hobbies. I'd say the thing that I like to do most is I love to talk to my ancestors. I love that spiritual part of what I'm doing. That's so much a part of my life. And I love, right now I'm teaching at the boys club. So
that's cool.
I love to talk to the kids and let them know that music is only a part of our life. And they know they can come and talk to me and they're feeling troubled or anything like that.
That's really cool. That's very cool. Anything you wish you did differently?
No, I feel very understanding that the path that I'm on is because of all the things that I've done before. And no. I wish that I had other things, but that will happen.
Yeah.
But no, I don't want to change the course. If it wasn't for the course that has happened to me, I wouldn't be here now. And I feel very grateful to be here.
That's very cool, man. Two more questions, bro.
Sure.
Toughest decision you had to make or most difficult thing you've had to do?
Stop working in the corporate world and go straight into music.
Yeah, that took a lot of courage, I bet.
It was forced on me and I just accepted it. And
was that after you had your accident?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, that was cool. So you got something out of you got something out of that.
Well, you know something? They always say that in order to be a really good fine piece of gold, you have to be burned. Yeah. All the impurities have to be burnt out.
Yeah.
The only thing that I wish, honest to God, was that I was in a relationship with a woman. But I mean, at that point now, I just have to always go also. These things will happen. I just have to, you know, like since I'm not there right now, I realize that this is the universe going, you got to get yourself at a point where when it does happen, you're grounded.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly on that point in my mind of grounding myself. When I hear about people like you who have been with your lady for a long time, you are so blessed.
Oh, believe me, I am. 26 years and she, it's,
yo, dude, know, that's beautiful.
We still like each other. Like, we laugh.
You see?
I mean, that,
that's what I'm talking about.
Right. I mean, we hang, we have fun. Like, I wouldn't want to hang with anybody else but her.
First. Y'all best friends. Like, that is right now.
Best friends.
That's
plus.
The mystery. You know what I mean? Yes.
No, but like, some people are just like friends. We don't want, you know, we're lucky. We're both similar. Like, we're friends, but we, you know, we have still have the romance going. We still have the fire for each other. I don't know how. I know that we've worked really hard to communicate and keep that shit going. And I guess it's paid off. And I'm, you know, I feel really lucky, but that's my greatest gift, man. I'll be honest with you. I wake up every day being thankful for that.
You know, it's taken me a while to learn how to stop being sad about what I don't have and be grateful for what I do.
Yeah, I think that's a natural thing. It takes a while for everybody. It's hard, especially when you've had heartache or, you know, it's easy to say in theory to give advice to somebody else, but it's hard to do that in reality with yourself. And you just got to spend a lot of time on it, man. You know, just know that it's meant, you know, if it's meant to be, it's going to happen sort of thing, you know. Do what you've been doing. Trust in the universe.
Yep, that's exactly what I'm doing.
It seems to be working.
I'm still smiling. I'm 59 years old, and I don't think I carry that age with me. You know?
No, man, if you're like a 35-year-old woman, this is the man for you.
There you go, bro.
There you go.
I believe.
And I believe too, man. And last question, biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years, and how much of that change has been intentional and how much is just a part of aging?
Sobriety is the biggest change that I've ever had in my life.
Good for you, man.
For me, it's the most important aspect of my movement, because now I have a better balance of logic and emotion.
That's great, man. And you just quit drinking. You don't go to NA or AA or anything like that.
Nope. I have family and friends who have been through it, and those are the people that I spoke to. And yeah, there's a lot of points where I was feeling low, and they're like, "Listen, it's just part of the process."
Yeah.
What happens is you learn how to accept yourself, and that's what I've done.
A guy I interviewed. He's a younger cat in his 30s. His name is Joey Landreth. He's out of Canada, band called the Brothers Landreth. And he had a quote, and I thought it was amazing. Excuse me. He said, when you stop drinking, everything is going to get 10 times worse, but then it's going to get 100 times better.
Because of the fact that you realize that all this pressure that you didn't think you could take is actually part of a building block.
Yeah.
Your perspective changes. So the things that you didn't want to deal with are the things that you realize are actually making you better.
Yeah. Well, good for you, man. Congratulations. I'm really happy. Getting sober is not an easy thing, man. And I'm really happy for you. Man, let me tell you, first of all, thank you very much for your time. You're like a really cool dude. I really enjoyed chatting with you. I'm glad we got to connect for sure, and we'll stay in touch. And let me tell people some of the stuff you have going on. First of all, it's Andre LaSalle, and you can check him out online at andrelasalle.com. It's Andre, AndreLasalle.com. Again, it's LaSalle, LasSalle. Two S's, two L's. Are you French? You're not French, though.
But my family back from Trinidad goes back to Martinique, goes back to France.
To France, okay.
Yes.
Premonition, he's got a project he's working on. You want to talk about that?
Premonition is my music that I've been working on for a couple of years. And now I'm incorporating all the things I do with house music and dance music and trying to just putting that guitar thread through everything. It's not guitar based. Some of it isn't guitar based, but that's my instrument of choice. And basically, I consider myself more of a musician than just a guitarist.
And you lost a lot of weight too, didn't you?
Oh yes.
Yeah, man. I didn't even think it was the same guy, because I saw some pictures. I'm like, holy shit, it's a stunt interview or something. So you look good, man. Congratulations. You're getting it together.
Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you.
Ladies.
I love you. I love you. Thank you, man. Ladies.
Yes. Burnt Sugar. Talk about that.
Burnt Sugar is a project that I got into through Vernon Reed, a friend of ours called Greg Tate. That's how I met Greg Tate, because when Vernon started doing the Black Rock Coalition, one of my groups called No ID was one of the early groups that was gigging at CBGB's. Greg Tate is a person that I've known for a bunch of years, but didn't really get to know him well until the last 10, 15 years, because we've been hanging out since the 70s. And Burnt Sugar is like based on Sun Ra and Butch Morris, which is really the group that I feel so grateful to be, because they don't, you can never get into a box. Every single time you get into a box, like we're doing four shows in San Francisco coming up. One night of Prince, one night of David Bowie, one night of Steely Dan, and the next night of like Oscar.
Holy smoke.
Yeah. I mean, these guys, I love them because they never let me occupy a space. You always have to be malleable.
That's great.
That's the
man.
Best word. That's the best word I can use.
Very cool.
Burnt Sugar is the most malleable situation I've ever been in, and has helped me in learning how to write better. In fact, I just did a version of Kiss when we did the Prince show, which starts off like a Celia Cruz, Tito Puente thing and goes into reggae and back into Latin.
Very cool.
So again, it's like a complete understanding that the only box that I have in Burnt Sugar is no box.
That's awesome, man. Very cool. And there's a Burnt Sugar website, right?
Yes, there is burntsugarindex.com.
Great. Check that out, burntsugarindex.com, and you'll be in San Francisco.
Yes.
When are you going to be there?
July 10th through July 15th.
Great. So if you're out in the Bay Area, go check out Andre at Burnt Sugar the 10th to the 15th of July. Tell him hey, and tell him you enjoy the interview. And because of
Burnt Sugar, I got to play with Melvin Van Peebles, who I'm still associated with.
Very cool.
Oh, yeah, we did Sweet Badass Song. I mean, yo, that. Now you talk about real. Whew. That's all I got to say.
There you go. And also with Vernon Reed, he's doing the Band of Gypsies Revisited. When is that going out?
We came back from California in early November. So now he's out with Living Color, and then we're going to see about doing some more stuff. So I should be hearing from him very soon. But Vernon and myself are always in contact. He's my brother. I mean,
very cool. And these guys have known each other since they're 15. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know something? I never leave him without giving him a hug and a kiss. So, I mean, he knows it. He'll look at me and give me and roll his eyes, and it's like, dude, just this is the way it is. Just accept it.
There you go, man. Got to accept some love, man.
Yeah, man. That's it.
Bro, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate everything.
Thank you so much, brother.
You're welcome, man. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, please share it on your social media channels. We appreciate your support. Thanks very much to Andre LaSalle for spending time with us. Check out Andre online at Andre, A-N-D-R-E, LaSalle, LaSalle.com. And if you're in the Bay Area, check out Burnt Sugar in mid-July. Make sure you go to EveryoneLovesGuitar.com. Sign up to get on our newsletter list so you and I can connect. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time.
I love you.
There you go, man. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first 3 audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.